Buddha Puja at age 15, huh? So tonight, who is good, Sadhu, come, you come forward here, light the candle, light the incense and the candle, huh? Then prepare for puja. Sehat, where is the incense? Lighter. The other one. Lily. Offer the lily. Pass the Suyan. Sadhu. Never mind, it's okay. Sadhu. Pujami Buddhang Kusumenanena Namatena Cha Hotu Mokhang Pupang Milayati Yatang Itamme Kayeo Tathayati Vinasabhavang Adivasetuno Bante Paniyang Parikampitang Anukampang Upadaya Patigang Hatu Muttamang. Okay, turn to page 18. The last page, we will make our aspiration basing on the offering. So, significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilement within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruits of our karma, so that we first diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. We will now make the aspiration together, overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Then sharing and transferring of merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Give people respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Compose our mind, develop the faith, sadhu and virya, then pay respect mindfully. Of meditation is rising, falling, outer adornment. Very good. Okay. So I will just maybe brief you a little bit on what we do here, so that hopefully through that understanding, it can help you to understand deeper what all this so-called method techniques and meditation objects are meant for. Mm. Because the word vipassana, a lot of people take it to mean that word which stands for insight meditation. Biowi is the three characteristics of nature. Passana is to insight into it. So whatever meditation that you do that brings about this wisdom or this understanding to allow you to directly insight through the direct seeing into all phenomena so that you can penetrate the characteristics of impermanence, suffering state and non-self, then that is vipassana. So vipassana is not defined by any method or technique. It's how you understand the training of the mind so that it has this heedfulness to develop this type of penetrative awakening or wisdom that the Buddha termed panya. So when you develop this type of wisdom, you will have this clarity of mind and wisdom to understand clearly who are you, what are you, and what is this five aggregate of form and mind all about. Then the first thing that your mind liberates is there is no more self-delusion, sakkayaditti, where you see clearly that this five aggregate of form and mind or the human being, they are all condition arising, causal phenomena. And they have these universal characteristics of impermanence. When you deludedly grasp and cling, it brings forth suffering. And because they are impermanent, it leads to suffering. It cannot be a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to, grasp onto and cling onto and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore this can be mine. So that's why that third characteristics of nature, which is anatta, is very important. If you can awaken to it, it's very penetrative. So anatta, normally people translate as non-self. But non-self is just a small part of anatta. Mm-hmm. So when you don't fully understand that Pali word, then it can be a bit confusing. Its real meaning is, the Buddha actually wants you to understand that within the conditioned world, everything is in a state of flux, condition arising, supported by various conditions. When condition arise, it arise. When condition continue to sustain itself, the phenomena continue to exist. But when condition cease to be, the so-called phenomena also cease to be. So because of that, the Buddha said you should develop the ability to meditate, to insight into this reality, so that you understand that there is no such thing as a permanent unchanging entity in this world that you can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp on to, and believe that this is me, this is I, the atta, the ego, this is self. If it's self, it will not tend towards suffering, the Buddha said. You will be able to actually derive from that self the fulfillment of your wish. So because of that, in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Buddha said, all the five aggregate, one by one, he goes through. He said, it's form, feeling, perception, activity of mind or sankhara and consciousness. If they are self, it will not tend towards suffering. And because they are not self, that's why it tends towards suffering. Then he asked the monk, all this five aggregate of form and mind, because you have used it for so long, you have meditated into it, is form permanent? Is feeling permanent? Similarly for perception, activity of mind and consciousness, through your meditation you will come to know that they are all impermanent. You will be able to see clearly their condition arising, cause of phenomena. Then he asked the monk again, he said, if it is impermanent, Is it going to give rise to happiness? Or is it going to give rise to pain? Because whatever state that arises, the Buddha said, because it's impermanent, it's subject to change. Finally, it will change, then disappear. So if you attach and cling and hold, suffering will be the result. So the monk came to know it is impermanent and it tends towards suffering. So whatever that is impermanent and tends towards suffering, is it right, the Buddha said, to hold on to it, to cling on to it deludedly and say, this is me, this is I, therefore this can be mine. And this is the most powerful understanding of Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Even though the sutta is very simple, more or less like what I just read to you. But to develop the penetrative understanding, you need to do all the important cultivation that the Buddha recommended. He said there are three turnings of the Four Noble Truths that you need to work upon to derive the three type of corresponding wisdom. First turning leads to Suttamaya Panya, the Buddha said. Suttamaya Panya is wisdom born of hearing the Sutta. Second turning is after you have heard the teaching, you need to reflect, contemplate, and inquire deep into what the Buddha has proclaimed. Then from the inquiry, the Buddha gives you the second turning, what they call like riddle like that, to actually assist you to develop the contemplative wisdom. Then the Buddha under the second turning is that this noble truth of suffering, which is the first noble truth, under the second turning, he says is to be understood. Then you have to inquire, why did the Buddha say that? Then how can I understand? Then the second noble truth is it, the cause of suffering, which is craving, born of self-delusion, sakayaditi, is to be abandoned. Then the third noble truth, second turning pointer or riddle, the Buddha said, there is a noble truth that explains clearly the cessation of suffering, that suffering need not be, enlightenment in the here and now, Nibbana can be realized. Cessation of suffering, which is Nibbana, can be realized in the here and the now. And this Nibbana, or the cessation of suffering under the second turning of the third noble truth, the Buddha said, is to be realized. Means the cultivator need to realize this noble truth. So all the four noble truths, the Buddha gave different emphasis. The last noble truth is the Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha said. If you cultivate it, it will lead to the end of all suffering. It will lead to enlightenment, liberation. Under the second turning of this fourth noble truth, the Buddha said, this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. It's so different from the first noble truth. First noble truth, this noble truth of suffering is to be understood and no need to cultivate. But the last, fourth noble truth, this noble truth of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the path that leads to the end of all suffering, is to be understood. Is to be cultivated. So the big difference between the two, you must understand. Then you will be able to develop the second turning wisdom, which is Cintamaya Panya. But you have to reflect, contemplate, inquire deep into it during the quiet moments when you are at retreat or at home alone with your mind already heedful, silent. Then the third noble truth is all about awakening, the Buddha said. It is wisdom born of meditation, bhavana. That's why it's called bhavana maya panya. Panya is wisdom. Wisdom born of bhavana, which is the meditative training. So this is an important understanding, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. So with that, I think we can start. So for those who really know how to meditate, you straight away you can start. Well, for the two sisters who are new to our class, I will give a bit of explanation. Can we off the light? Yeah. So, in order to understand meditation, the Buddha teaches the essential Dhamma. The essential Dhammas are the five mental hindrances and the five spiritual faculties. So the Buddha said, the reason why living being's mind is not peaceful, not able to develop the meditative state, is because they have these five mental hindrances. They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. When the mind has this hindrance, it will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful, from entering the meditative state. So the five hindrance is the cause of all this inability to have a meditative mind. That's why most living beings, they are not peaceful, they are not mindful. That's why they cannot be heedful. They cannot be with the moment in silent inner awareness to understand what is going on, to see clearly the reality of the moment. So when it comes to meditation, the first thing that you have to understand is this hindrance, they are always there as long as you lack the five opposite spiritual faculties. So the Buddha actually taught his teaching in a very systematic manner. He said, your main purpose is to develop and cultivate these five spiritual faculties. When the five spiritual faculties are developed, the hindrance will disappear on its own. So these five spiritual faculties, which is Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, or in English is faith in the Buddha and his teaching, the spiritual zeal to learn the teaching, to walk this way, to cultivate. Then mindfulness, or sati. Then samadhi is the collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. The stability of mindfulness will lead to samadhi. Then when you have sati and samadhi, the Buddha said, you can see things as they are clearly, without any stirring of the mind or conditioning. Then wisdom will arise, the last spiritual faculty, which is Panya. So, these five spiritual faculties are most important. So, when we start our puja, which was recommended by Lord Buddha, it's actually to cultivate the first three initial spiritual faculty. We develop Sadha in the Buddha and his teaching. Then later on, through the understanding of who he is and what he is, our mind determined to walk this way. That's why there is this virya, second spiritual faculty, it will arise. The faith will make the mind very calm, very composed. Then it will arise the second spiritual faculty of virya. Then with virya, it will motivate you to meditate, to develop the mindfulness, sati. So the Buddha says sati is very important. Without sati, you cannot be heedful. The whole of his teaching center on heedfulness. The Buddha, before he passed away, he told the monk, apamadena sampadeta, strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless anymore. So heedfulness is very important, key. But without mindfulness, there is no heedfulness. So what the Buddha said is, this spiritual faculty or sati must be cultivated. Then when you cultivate this sati, you become heedful because you can use it to meditate, to develop the wisdom. So according to the Buddha, he mentioned under Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23, the importance of heedfulness. He said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So the moment you don't have heedfulness, your spiritual life is closed. You are as if dead, spiritually. Then he defined apamada under Dhammapada verse 23. He said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and those who hold on to these two cultivations steadfastly, they will realize the bond-free Nibbana. The key word here is ever mindful. That's why to be heedful, there are two parts to train. First is to train the mind to be ever mindful. Then only you use it to develop the meditation, to cultivate the wisdom. You combine the two, you become heedfulness. So those who are heedful, they are destined for enlightenment. So our spiritual faculty of sati is to help us to develop this mindfulness. Our whole of meditation is centered on this. So the Buddha said you don't have to fight the hindrance. You don't have to suppress, control or do anything with the hindrance. You just focus on the spiritual faculty. And when you stabilize them, the hindrance will disappear. So our puja is all centered on that. Then now is the form of meditation to train your mind to have sati, then to stabilize it, then use it to meditate. So now you understand, the focus of meditation is to train this mind to be mindful, then to stabilize it so that you are heedful. So coming back to all the meditation techniques and methods, they are only skillful means to train the mind, to anchor the mind so that it will not heedlessly wander off. That's why you can use any method or any technique to do that. Yeah. But the Buddha also knew living beings are not able to meditate so easily because the hindrances are most of the time haunting them because their daily life, they do not have the mindfulness to live an orderly daily life. Their daily life are most of the time in disorder. They are most of the time heedless. And because of that, when you want to sit down and meditate, the mind doesn't follow your whatever intention. You want to relax and be peaceful. It's not going to follow what you tell the mind because of the hindrance. So what we do here is, if you are still new, if you need to train your mind, I will teach you a skillful means which we call mind sweeping method. This one you train your mind just to feel aware, then relax. You don't think. This is to decondition your heedless thinking and train your mind to be at the location you want it to be. And this is a very powerful, skillful means. You need to train, you need to do this. Then after that, as you train, you can combine with loving kindness or metta to develop inner well-being. Because the mind sweeping method will lead to inner peace, inner calmness. Yeah. Then metta will lead to inner well-being. Yeah. Then after your mind has been deconditioned, it is more calm, more peaceful, more quiet. And this mind can start its training. Then you can use any method or technique or skillful means that you are familiar with to just be mindful of the object of meditation to stabilize that mindfulness. Then after you are stabilized, you should dispel with the technique or method or the object of meditation. Otherwise, if you continue to do it, you become gullible. Because that is only to train the mind to be aware, to be heedful. Once the mind is trained, it will be silent, peaceful and aware within, without any support. The mind need not have any dwelling. It will be in sati. It will become centered, peaceful and aware with clarity on its own. And that is the mind that has already been trained. In the state of pasati, silent mind, meditative mind, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. So with this understanding, I will give you some short instruction on how to do the mind sweeping method. Relax your body and mind. Make sure you have a stable posture. Make sure your backbone is straight. Then breathe in, breathe out normally. Close your eye. Then you feel your forehead. You can detect any tension, any stress within, you just silently relax, relax, and relax. Yeah. Then you continue to sweep it down to your facial muscle and eye muscle. Again, you feel, you don't think. If there's any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just silently and soothingly relax it. Relax, relax and relax every part of it, every muscle within your facial muscle and eye muscle. Feel it soothingly relax. Then in order to assist you to develop the inner well-being and the relaxed mind, you can combine it with what they call loving kindness meditation. Yeah. You can start off by visualizing yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can radiate this radiant smile, there is joy, there is happiness. The mind that has joy and happiness will be very calm, very peaceful, very relaxed. So it will relax on its own. Your facial muscle, everything, it will relax on its own when you can radiate a radiant smile. Then after that, you radiate metta, following what I radiate. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within your entire body and mind. All of your cells within each and every one of it. Then you can repeat, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May this body and mind of mine too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Feel it, physically and mentally, free of suffering. Then may there be peace, may there be love within our hearts. May there be joy within our hearts. Then you can do the same, radiate the same metta to your loved ones. May my loved ones too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May their mind states too be free from all suffering, free from all negative emotions. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. And may it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you come back to your heart area. Then again you radiate this same metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity and all Kayanamita and all non-human all beings, known and unknown, seen and unseen, within this vicinity of Subhanjaya. May they all too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we continue with this metta. May all beings within the whole of Subhanjaya, the whole of Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, then our solar system, our galaxy or Milky Way, then the entire universe, may they all too be free from all suffering, free from all physical and mental suffering. May they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May their mind states too be free from all enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May they all too keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within the hearts of all beings. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you can bring your attention back to your facial muscle. Feel it soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your neck. Feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then you sweep your mind down to your heart or your chest area. This is a very important location within your body. This is where your life force arises and passes away. This is where the seat of consciousness is. So you just silence your mind and feel around the heart area. If you can detect any vibration or even your heartbeat, you just silence it, everything, and just stay with it. Maintain silence, inner awareness to be with the phenomena. But if you are new, if your mindfulness has not developed yet, then you cannot detect anything. It's okay. Then you can do the relaxation just like the mind sweeping method. When you feel your forehead, you feel your heart, do the same. Then just relax, relax, and relax every part of your chest area. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you move your attention down to your stomach, do the same. Feel, relax. Then you move it down to your abdomen. For those who are familiar with the object of meditation using your abdomen, what you do now is you don't go and look for anything. You just silence your mind and just feel around the abdomen area. Just silent and feel. Don't look for anything. Then you see what happens. When you are silent enough with the spiritual faculty or sati, when your mind can actually settle down, then the phenomena will come to you. You don't go and look for it. The so-called rising and falling, it will arise without any words. Just a silent mind, be with the flow. If you are sensitive, if you are silent and mindful enough, you will detect it. Then after that, you can see the two difference between what you used to do. And now, with the understanding, you just silence your mind and stay there. Then allow the phenomena to detect this mindfulness. Then mind and phenomena move as one without words. And that is the tea. But if you are not doing this, it's okay. You just feel, relax, then you move on to your buttock. Then you feel your leg, relax. Then you can reverse the whole process. Leg, buttock. Feel, relax, abdomen, feel, relax, stomach, feel, relax, chest area, feel, relax, and silent. Then feel your shoulder, hand, back to shoulder, neck. Then feel your facial muscle, relax every part. Just feel and relax. Facial muscle, eye muscle, then forehead. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. So, you can now straight away go into your meditation object that you are familiar with, or whatever skillful means that you are used to. If you don't have any, you can use Anapanasati. Anapanasati is a very neutral object that the Buddha recommended. Even the Buddha himself used. And it's very conducive to develop sati, to stabilize sati. So the Buddha said, anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So anapana sati is just to be mindful of this in and out breath. That's why you don't concentrate, you don't focus, you don't note. You just silence your mind. Like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. Then like the Buddha described under the anapana sati sutta, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Aware means what? The mind and the phenomena move as one. So when you feel your breathing, it's like you feel your forehead. When you detect that breath moving, you just breathe in, breathe out naturally. The moment the awareness detect it, the mind and the phenomena move as one. That's why sati and the breathing move as one. So when the mind and the breath move as one in harmony without thought, that is anapanasati. That is mindfulness of the in and out breath. So you just allow this training to continue. Initially, for those who are new, because the mind is not trained, is heedless, it will wander off very fast. So you have to expect this wandering thought or wandering mind to arise very often. But as long as you are patient, willing to train, every time you wander off, bring your attention back to the breathing. Then not long. It's easier than learning how to ride a bicycle. Not long. Sometime within 5-10 minutes, the anapanasati will stabilize. Yeah. Then when it stabilizes, you just breathe in, breathe out normally. Yeah. Then when you are in sati or mindfulness without thought, the mind will settle down and become very peaceful, very calm. And you will experience a different type of mind state. Initially, piti will arise. Piti is a meditative calm, meditative peace, meditative rapture. So this spiritual peace, meditative rapture or calmness, when they arise, you continue to relax into it. Don't go and focus or control. Just continue to relax and be mindful of it. As you relax, it will become more and more subtle, more and more refined, more and more peaceful. Then piti can transform later on into sukha. Sukha is a spiritual bliss, a mind state that is a lot more refined than piti, very blissful. Then you will actually settle down into long breath. Every breathing, the in and out breath, every one of it, like appear very long. And there is a lot of clarity within every moment of that in and out breath. Then when your mind has this ability to be mindful and to be in a relaxed state of awareness to experience all this piti and sukha, it will actually stabilize until this mind becomes very, very calm, very peaceful, very blissful, very relaxed. Then it will slowly develop into another stage. We call it parsati. Parsati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind without thought. So during that time, when you reach parsati, the mind actually slow down, become very refined until there is no movement. Like your breathing also become very subtle, like everything has stopped. Because it's so refined, you cannot even detect it. So during this time, do not panic. Do not go and do sitting and touching. Just continue to relax and silent your mind and maintain awareness. Then this subtle breathing, later on, slowly, as you stabilize your mindfulness, until the mind enters sati, until pasati become very stable, very clear, then you will come to realize that this mind can become peaceful on its own. It doesn't need any more object of meditation. Then wherever you locate, the mind is very sensitive. It can detect even the subtle vibration or your own heartbeat. You don't need stethoscope. That type of mind is the meditative mind, the silent mind, the true mindfulness within. So when you have meditated until it has become like that, then you just relax and silent everything and just stay at the breathing. Then you will come to know one day that this subtle breathing can become clear to you again. It can become very prominent again. Then any slightest movement or activity within the form of mind, the body, the mind is very clear. Yeah. Then during this time, there is no pain, nothing. You are very peaceful, very relaxed and very calm. So you continue to train your mind this way. then you can later on silence your mind and just stay at the heart area. Stay at the heart area to just feel. Then when you can detect anything, you just silence and be with it. Then you will start to understand all the teachings of the Buddha as it arises and pass away within your form and mind. You will witness the dependent origination, the Four Noble Truths, the essential Dhammas. Everything will become clear to you. Okay, I will allow you to continue your meditation. Then I will ring the bell in about 10 minutes time. Then we will continue with our Q&A after this. also still want to meditate, you can continue. For the seven now, slowly, mindfully, come on, meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. Even as you come out of meditation, all of your opening of your eye, movement within your own kaya activity, you have to develop mindfulness over it. Means body and mind aware of all this action and movement. Then even when you want to move your leg, stretch your leg, or your hand, blinking of your eye or whatever, then any adjustment, you need to maintain mindfulness. If possible, continuously aware. Then this state of mind that you have trained, you have to carry it into your daily life, to use it to live life, to cultivate what they call sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement in the present moment. And that is the ultimate real meditation. Okay, now we will do the what they call invocation of devas before we continue. Turn to page 6. I will read to you the English translation. Then after that, get Ying Bi to lead the invitation in Pali. In the universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the Dhamma. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Okay. You can start maybe.
Samantha Chakravalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajas Sunantu Sakkamokkhadang Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Do Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dittiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Panayiko Pachatang Veditabo Nohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango ปัติปันโนภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆอะหังจัตตาริปุริสโยคะนิอัตตปุริสปุคะละสาภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆอะหุนิโยปาหุนิโยดักขิณิโยอัญจะลิกะระณิโยอนุตตรังปุญญังคีตังโลกาสทิสาธุสาธุสาธุ Okay, we pay respect mindfully to Triple Gem. Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami.Sanghang Pujayami. Okay. We will now commence our second session. Second session is reporting of meditation, followed by question and answer. You got any question related to meditation or the Dhamma or anything that you want to understand on how to apply what you have learned here and the teaching to understand life and to live the noble life, you can ask. Okay?Full use of the opportunity. You can just report whatever meditation that you develop and go through. Then after that, I will help you to develop the understanding of it. Then you got question, you can also ask. Anybody? What about the two new kayalamita? How you find the meditation? Is it easier?To do when you are here? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
One time, you know, when I meditate, I tend to see a lot of nice scenery.
Oh, good.
Then,
the mind, what do you do? What do you do then?
Oh, I just come down and admire the scenery.
Okay. How do you start? How do you start?
Before
you actually come to that state. What were you doing before that?
I just calm down, then concentrate until I
concentrate means you use your object of meditation.
Yes.
The rising falling there.
Yes.
Then after that, this what they call beautiful scenery.
Yes, appear like, you know, seeing videos.
I know. Image after image.
Yes.
So what do you do?
when I started is that on a riding on a roller coaster, flying here and
I
enjoy so much.
Okay.
Then after that, seeing images, you know, also enjoy that part. Then now I don't have this sort of feeling anymore already. Calm.
Okay.
Or if not, sometimes monkey mind and calm down.
Oh, okay. Means you can still see your thoughts wandering off.
Yes.
But you were not able to actually remain with the object of meditation. Are you able to? How long can you maintain that mindfulness on your object of meditation?
Sometimes really when I'm in the mood, 1 hour plus.
Okay. Then when you are in that state,
Yes. Is
it a continuous happening or sometimes you lost consciousness like you doze off? Then sometimes the mind wanders off. Then after that, you suddenly become alert again and aware again. Then you continue. Or is it just very calm, very peaceful, very quiet, then you are fully aware within, then everything that happened, there is clarity. Yeah. Are you able to describe? Oh. When you are in the mood, what I mean is, what actually happened during that time?
Actually, yeah. I feel I'm aware of myself, you know,
yeah.
not dreaming about aware, then can see very nice scenery.
That one is the earlier part. Eh?
Yes.
But what I mean is when you can stay with the object of meditation, you say you can stay there for 1 hour or 1 hour plus.
Yes.
During that time, is that awareness with clarity continuously just aware and silent, or something else happened?
Something else happened.
Means you are not with the object of meditation continuously. Oh. Means that stability of mindfulness and awareness still not there yet. That's why most people will experience what you experience. But yours, it tends toward what they call a bit of concentration part. It's not really mindfulness. You become like absorbed into it. You go and look for it, then after that with the thought, you want to stay with it. Then when this, like you say, nice scenery, everything, this slight thing, it actually happens when you are at the threshold of going into concentration. Because during this time, your sankhara, actually, they will start to appear. Then because you are more quiet and more calm, then you can see them. Like you say, like see video, like slide after slide. But the more important thing is, like I explained just now, what is the purpose of meditation? What is the focus of meditation? That one, if you can recall, then you will understand what you are doing in the name of meditation. Otherwise, many people will end up doing things like what you experience. Then initially they get excited because they say, oh, very calm, very peaceful. You say you enjoy seeing all this scenery. But after a while, like good food, no longer special. Then you look for new things. You look for new method, new technique, new teacher, and you run over. So this is very typical of most cultivators who are not focused and not clear about the meditation. So coming back to the Buddha's teaching, you remember just now I mentioned the Buddha's explanation is very easy to understand and very clear. He said the reason why the human mind cannot become peaceful, you cannot have this inner peace, inner silence, and inner awareness, is because the mind has the five hindrances. Sometimes all are there. In fact, most of the time. But sometimes one or two of them are not there. But most of the time, the first, second, third, and the fourth is there. So when this thing arises, the mind naturally becomes heedless. So let's go into this. What the Buddha meant by sensual desire, ill will, is the duality part of your mind, understand? Like you see this word, sense desire. So when you experience something that is pleasant, or sense experience that you like, then you develop attachment, craving. That's why it becomes a sensual desire. You desire for it to continue, like good meditation, the calmness, the peace, the piti, and the sukha. Then you want it repeated. Because you say, that is good meditation. Actually, that one is sensual desire. But this one, the Buddha is talking about in your daily life. Even in your meditation, they exist. But they are most powerful when you are in your daily life. If you are not heedful, you have not trained your mind. So what happens is, every moment of sense experience when you live your life, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste, tactile, feel or think, you tend to react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, taste, tactile, feel or think. So that reaction are the two duality, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. That's why every time your mind react, make judgment, and stir, then this hindrance come about. So if throughout the day, every moment of sense experience, your mind do this, means this hindrance continuously arising until it become what they call habitual. Understand that? Habitual. Habitual means it become a habit, mechanical. Then you no need to do anything wrong. You will repeat the habit. Understand that? Oh, switch it off, switch it off. Sorry, yeah. Because of your mind. Huh? Pull it out, huh? Push. Switch it off. Huh? Ah, yes, thank you. Sorry. That's why I was thinking all the time, don't have this disturbance. So I forgot about that, yeah. So what happened is, the mind become what they call mechanical, because this habitual tendency of sense, the reaction, every moment of sense experience, your mind react to it, understand? And because of that, you do until it becomes so habitual. Yeah. Then when this becomes habitual, when you sit and meditate, actually this is still going on. All your memory, your accumulated daily life experience, your unfinished business or problem of life, actually they keep on arising. Yeah. That's why you find that it's very difficult to develop the meditative peace and calm. You try to concentrate, focus, control the mind, and do all those things. This is what people who don't understand meditation will do. So that's why they go into one-pointedness. They go into one nimitta, then they fix the mind there. Or they go into continuous mindfulness, absorption, to make the mind peaceful, or force it to be peaceful. Some they use chanting, they verbalize and all those things. Yeah. You can try. Those are skillful means to actually calm the mind down. But the main purpose of meditation is not about concentration. It's about training the mind to be quiet, peaceful, and aware of it. Yeah. Then this samadhi will develop by itself. So the first two, you already understand how it comes about through your daily life. The third one is sloth and torpor, sleepiness of mind, or lethargic mind. If you don't see the importance of meditation, you don't see the what they call value in it, you will feel that meditation is like something torturing you or disturbing you. Sometimes you sit after a long time, especially retreat, you say, I might as well go home. Why am I wasting my time and torturing myself here and all those things? You cannot understand. But when you see the importance of this teaching, the importance of developing this training so that it can actually bring about transformation in you, enlightenment in you, so that your mind can liberate and you can understand life, then you know how to live life. Then from that moment onward, no more suffering. Your life becomes beautiful, meaningful. If you see the importance of this teaching, the greatness of this teaching, that it will bring forth a what they call very strong faith in you, then this faith will drive you to meditate. Then that virya, which is a spiritual faculty of spiritual zeal or tenacity, will actually move you to meditate. Then you won't be sleepy. That's why this come about, because when you try to meditate, you don't see the importance, then you are like very confused, very disturbed in that mind state. So sometimes you doze off. Then sometimes your body also tired. Yeah. Then for most people, where their mind has been active, once you force it to sit in a permanent posture, it will be sleepy. But the natural tendency is to just go and sleep or rest. Because most human beings who are heedless is always like that. When they are not doing anything, they just want to sleep. Sometimes they got problem, they cannot sleep. Yeah. They cannot sleep is where they got this fourth hindrance, restlessness of mind. Restlessness of mind comes about when you do not keep your precept, when you violate your precept, when you cause karmic negativity. Yeah. Any of the precepts, when you violate them, it will bring about fear, worry, anxiety. Then, sometimes sorrow and lamentation. A mind that has got fear, worry, and anxiety will be restless. Understand that? Take for example, you got health problem or financial problem. Yeah. Or you lie and you cheat. Or you commit sexual misconduct, then people came to know. Or you misappropriate thing, then it become a police case or discipline action against you. So all this can create fear in the living being. Yeah. Or when you have relationship failure, you can become very unhappy, very miserable. Yeah. Then also when you have career problem, it's the same. So in life, the First Noble Truth reality can actually bring about a lot of suffering, a lot of fear, worry, anxiety. Then that will make the mind restless. And when you are restless, you cannot meditate. You cannot even calm down to do anything. Then you cannot make proper decision because there is no clarity. That's why these hindrances are very powerful. They actually make you miserable, suffer. Mm. Then those with this hindrance, the evil roots are very strong. Yeah. Otherwise, you don't have this hindrance. Then the spiritual faculty are completely lacking. Doubt is the last one. When you have doubt, you are not sure of a lot of things. When you are not sure of a lot of things, means you don't have faith. Your mind is very weak. Then you have a lot of superstition, belief, and all these things. So that's why these mental hindrances, they are very powerful. But the Buddha said, you don't go and fight them. Don't go and control them or suppress them. Don't go and do anything with them. You just understand that this will be wiped off the moment you cultivate these five spiritual faculty. That's why the whole teaching is about teaching you how to cultivate and develop spiritual faculty. When your spiritual faculties are there, the Buddha said, you can understand spiritual teaching easily. Then these five will help you to overcome the hindrance. Take for example, Sadha. When you are confident, and when you have very strong faith in the Buddha and his teaching, through knowing how special a being he is. He is not only enlightened, he is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. Means he is like the most wise and virtuous person ever to be born during his time. To have such a great teacher, you will have a lot of respect and gratitude towards him. And because of that, your faith in him becomes unshakable. Then you see the importance of this teaching that can bring about great transformation, enlightenment, liberation of mind, freedom from suffering, giving you good understanding and new meaning to life. Then life can become so beautiful, so meaningful. And because of that, you determine to cultivate, to walk this way. That's why the spiritual faculty of virya will arise through the faith. When you have faith, your mind is very calm and very composed. So there is no more restlessness, no more doubt. Then when you have virya, you are no longer sleepy. Sloth and torpor cannot affect you. Then when you start to cultivate diligently to develop mindfulness through this meditative training, initially through puja, you pay respect, body and mind as one move. That is sati. Then you stabilize it. Then during the form of meditation, you do the mind sweeping method. Then metta. You train your mind to have inner peace and inner well-being. It will strengthen your faith. Then together with the faith and the spiritual zeal, your sati will definitely come about. Because you are serious, you are sincere, and you have the faith. So when sati stabilized, samadhi will be the result. Samadhi is a collected mind, the unwavering mind. When sati stabilized, the mind becomes collected. It enters samadhi. This samadhi is not concentration. It's not one-pointedness. It's not absorption. It's just a continuous mindfulness that is very stable. It's so stable until the mind does not stir. Unwavering. Means when you see something or hear something or recall something, it does not stir, does not panic. Means When you live life, when you experience sense experience, even a lightning strike or whatever, the mind is very collected and unwavering. Means it's very stable. Means there is clarity. That's why during this moment, when you have this stability of samadhi, being born of the continuity or mindfulness, stability of it, then it can have the clarity of mind to sitting in the SDR because the mind does not stir, even in the midst of daily life and sense experience. So sati and samadhi will allow you to see things as they are, to understand the truth and the reality, then you develop the wisdom. Then later on, as you use this to contemplate, to develop the second, third in wisdom more and more, Chintamaya Banya, then it will stabilize the second turning of the Four Noble Truths. Then this wisdom will stabilize and prepare the base for you to be awakened. That's how this Panya later on, it will arise. But it is through that very penetrative insight into phenomena. Yeah. The insight comes from this stability of mindfulness and samadhi that has this, what they call second turning contemplative wisdom, that bring forth some form of equanimity. Then during this time, it is completely quiet, silent, without thought. Then when the condition is there, when things are right, it will suddenly insight. Yeah. And it can happen anytime. Sometimes first turning through hearing something, the Dhamma or truth, or whatever vibration. Then sometimes through reflection, contemplation, when you are in a setting that is very, very conducive. Yeah. Then sometimes it can be during your bhavana or meditation, cultivation, especially daily mindfulness, yeah, or in your former sitting meditation, that it can just awaken. So this spiritual faculty, when you develop, once sati is there, it is only aware without thought. When it's without thought, there can never be restlessness, and the mind don't have duality. Where duality comes from your thought, understand? It's a mental state. That's why when you are aware without any thought, there is no mental state. It's peaceful. So sensual desire, you will restless no more. Then similarly, samadhi will make you peaceful too. Then when there is wisdom, all these five hindrances cease to be. Yeah. So meditation is about developing this focus to train our mind to have this. So the puja helps to develop the first three. But the sati is not stable under puja because you only bow. That's why you have to go for formal meditation or retreat to stabilize that mindfulness. It's like you need to build up your stamina, your muscle, you go to a gym, understand? But after that you have to come out of the gym to go and play the real sport, understand? You cannot always stay in the gym. It's like you go retreat and continue to stay in the retreat center. And every time you got a problem, run back to the retreat. It's not going to do you much help. But if you do with understanding at the retreat, then you make use of it, then your mind develops wisdom at the first, second, or third turning. Then you continue to develop this mind that is trained so that it can be part of your cultivation in daily life, so that you can bring forth the trained mind into your daily life to do the daily mindfulness cultivation. And that is the real meditation. So that's why here our focus is to train our mind to be mindful, stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then it will become heedful. Because when you have this ever mindful, stable mind, to actually cultivate the meditation, to give rise to wisdom, it becomes apamada or heedfulness. So heedfulness, like the Buddha said, under Dhammapada verse 21, is the most important. That's why before he passed away, he also reminded the monk to strive on with heedfulness. So under Dhammapada verse 21, the Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. If you are not heedful spiritually, you are as if dead. You cannot meditate. So meditation, the focus is to train your mind to be ever mindful, then use it to meditate. So we come back to your question. What are you doing? Understand? are you training your mind? Because you were not told. You were just saying not. You're not rising, falling. Then when you have this, I don't know what they teach you after that. Maybe to note the scenery, or note the thinking, or note wandering, all those things. I don't know. Yeah. But more important is, you yourself must ask yourself, what am I doing in the name of meditation? Is this meditation? To those who understand, this is not meditation. You are not training your mind. You just do something that people tell you to do. You follow instruction without understanding. Yeah. But here, because I have already briefed you all before, and the way I share is, I always emphasize on understanding before you do. Meditation need to be done with understanding. Otherwise, you are wasting your time. You are being gullible. I have repeated that many, many times. So, if you are not clear, you have to spend more time on the pariyatti, first phase of Dhamma, the learning of the doctrine. Understand the essential teaching until very clear. That's why don't be in a hurry to go into meditation straight away. Make sure you understand clearly what you are doing, what this essential Dhamma are. Then when you go in, you don't become gullible. And you won't actually waste your time when you are there doing meditation. Because the moment you understand with clarity the essential Dhamma, and you understand clearly what the Buddha meant by all this, then that meditation becomes very simple. Actually, it's very, very simple. It's only the 5 spiritual faculties. How difficult is it to cultivate spiritual faculty? Yeah? Let me sincerely ask you this question. Is it very difficult? Yeah? It's not difficult, is it? The first 3, the third one is where the hard work has to come in. But the moment you break free and able to establish the deep mindfulness, you are already home. Because the Buddha says, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die, and you are destined for enlightenment. So the moment you heed this, that's why you have to train your mind to be ever mindful, stabilize it. That awareness, without thought, just be with it. Don't try to know when you are meditating. These are all sidetracked. This type of vision is still not strong, your this so-called rising falling one. The one that do anapanasati and one-pointedness on, that one is very, very strong. When they focus on the nimitta or the 40 object of meditation, concentration, then the jhanic factor come about. Then their mind can actually apply the thought and sustain the thought there. Yeah. So the first 2 jhanic factor is vitaka and vichara, apply thought followed by sustained thought. They apply their thought on the object of meditation, then they sustain their thought there. They stay there. They continuously put energy there. Then they develop the calm mind, piti, sukha, the 3rd and 4th jhanic factor. Then after that, they focus and develop one-pointedness. That's why ekagata is the 5th jhanic factor. But of all the 5 jhanic factors, only piti is the enlightenment factor. The rest are all non-enlightenment factor. And do you know that within the 5 jhanic factor, that you do jhana, there is no sati. There is only vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. And you tell me, what are you going into? So all those who went into that, their mind become very concentrated, very powerful. Then they go into absorption, samadhi. And during that time, they not only see all this, it's very clear one. The slide that come, very clear one. Then it's like they can see past life and all those things. Because those subconscious and the unconscious image of the past, they can also appear. Yeah. Then sometimes people become deluded and gullible. Then they cling on to all those, hold on to all those things. Then they develop psychic and all those things. The purpose of meditation is not to do all these things. The purpose of meditation is to start off with the 5 spiritual faculty, then to develop the 7 factors of enlightenment that can bring about enlightenment. The 7 factors of enlightenment are very simple, the Buddha said. The moment you have sati, mindfulness developed, is the first factor enlightenment. When you have sati, you say, you have to move on to use it to investigate Dhamma or all the essential teaching that he has taught you. That's why second enlightenment factor is Dhamma Vichaya. That's why this is Dhamma investigation. Through what? Through the three turning, hearing of the teaching. Then you investigate through contemplation, reflection, inquiry. Then the third turning, you silence your mind and meditate and investigate into the truth and reality. Means the characteristics of all phenomena. That's how you investigate. That's why without sati, you cannot start. There is no meditation. Without sati, there is no heedfulness. There is no Dhamma investigation. So the moment you investigate into the Dhamma, the Buddha said, then you realize you stand up to investigation. Especially the Dhammapada was 1 and 2. About the mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. Then he said, if you think, act and speak with an unwholesome mind, with a wicked mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, the Buddha said, suffering will follow you. Just like the wheel that follows the hood. So if you want your life to have suffering and misery, continue to be heedless. Continue to think, act and speak with a wicked mind or heedless mind. So, when you have this evil root, they are the roots of all evil. It will make you evil. That's why the essential Dhamma talks about the three evil roots. What constitutes evil? And when the evil's roots are there, the so-called form and mind, the human being, will become very evil. And that is how you fall. That's how karma comes about. Evil roots will condition evil karma, and you reap what you sow. The fruition of it is, whatever you do to people, it will come back to you. So this first Dhammapada verse, you can put to test, the Buddha said. And you put to test, you will come to understand that it is very powerful, it is the truth. But when you get angry, do you suffer? When you hit out at others, not only you suffer, others also suffer. When you are selfish, you try to deceive, cheat, harm, and commit sexual misconduct and all those things. Does it cause suffering to fellow living being and yourself? It is going to cause a lot of suffering. So that first Dhammapada verse become very clear. Then the Buddha repeat the same thing for the Dhammapada verse 2. He said again, our mind is very important. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything comes to be. So you have to take care of mind. So if you train your mind, develop heedfulness, then you act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, with a heedful mind, that are free of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. This is how you develop understanding of life. If you want to be happy, very simple. Train your mind to be heedful, never be heedless, to avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Then automatically your life will be beautiful. Happiness will always follow you. Yeah. Like your shadow that never leaves you. Because you are incapable of evil. And you reap what you sow. You are born of your karma, head of your karma, condition supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So your karma will come and support you. That's why you have a lot of blessings, a lot of merits, a lot of goodness. Things will come to you. Yeah. So all this is part and parcel of the essential teaching, the essential Dhamma. Then when you can investigate into this and realize that the Buddha's teaching is so beautiful, you stand up to investigation, what will happen to your mind? You will become what? Very confident in that. Correct or not? Because you stand up to investigation, then you realize the Buddha is right all the while. His wisdom is so powerful. And when your faith becomes very strong because whatever you investigate into, stand up to investigation. So that faith will strengthen, that it will drive you to cultivate more diligently. Correct or not? That is the third factor of enlightenment. Virya. Understand or not? That's why from sati, you go and investigate Dhamma. That is, stand up to investigation, your faith becomes unshakable, it will drive you to meditate. That virya is the third factor of enlightenment. Then when there is virya, the Buddha said, you will experience the next factor of enlightenment. Is it? Pity will arise. Yeah. Then when pity arises, it will not go to sukha, because sukha is not an enlightenment factor. What is the next enlightenment factor after pity? Ah, pasati. Very good. So we got some space here. Joyce, can you sit over here a bit? The seven factors of enlightenment, huh? Sati, Dhamma Vichaya. Huh? Dhamma Vichaya is Dhamma investigation. Huh? Or Dhamma investigation, DI. Then third one is what? Virya. Fourth one, pity. After pity is what? Sorry. Pasati, Then after that, samadhi. Last one is on upeka, equanimity. I don't know, 1P or 2P, not very sure. 1P double K, okay. So I have explained what sati is. When you cultivate it very stable, then only you can use it to investigate Dhamma, okay? After you investigate Dhamma, it stand up to investigation, your faith becomes stronger, unshakable. That it will drive you to cultivate. And that is virya. Your spiritual zeal, tenacity to cultivate become very strong. Because you know this is the truth. It is leading to enlightenment. Then after that, your mind become very calm, very peaceful. Because you are already, you have already developed the sati. So this sati, it will straight away become very stable. Until it accumulate into samadhi later on. But before samadhi, it will become piti. Piti is a very calm meditative mind that is continuously mindful. Especially the first time you develop it, you feel very good. It's a spiritual calmness, spiritual peace within your mind. First time, not distracted by fear, worry, anxiety and thinking. It's just mindful. That's why it's very calm, very still, without thought. At that state can give rise to piti. And this piti is an enlightenment factor. It can bring forth enlightenment. But the moment you relax further and it becomes sukha, then you get attached, then it's no more enlightenment factor. Because it becomes so blissful, you don't want to continue. Understand? And that blissful state is really, really blissful, I tell you. You so blissful until when you are inside the meditation, I don't know how to describe to you. It's so blissful. During the early days, I experienced them. Then I really, really need to relax into it. Until this sukha disappears. Yeah. Then you don't go and look for it, though. You have to understand that everything is condition arising. When your spiritual faculty are there, this meditative enlightenment factor will arise. Then you will settle down. That's why from piti, you have to move to pasati. Pasati is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind. That's why I told you, you continue to relax. The sukha also will become very, very different. Then after that, the bliss, everything will stabilize. Then the mind become more and more subtle, more and more quiet, until no movement. And when there is no movement, all the bliss, everything stops. Where it becomes pasati. Pasati is tranquility, stillness. means the mind is completely still, silent. But this is not cessation yet. It's just a quiet, very, very quiet mind. No thought, nothing. No stirring, nothing. That's why it's the silent mind, the meditative mind. The moment you hit this, this is the meditative mind. This is the one that can meditate. And meditation is to develop this meditative mind. Or silent mind. This is where a lot of cultivator and meditator fail to understand and develop. Instead, when their rising, falling become very quiet, very subtle, like they cannot detect, they go and do sitting touching. They ask you to go and do sitting touching to develop all those. But you have to understand, if you go and do all those things, you make your mind active again. This one can only come about positive when you are completely silent. Don't do anything. Just silent. Continuously relax into it and just maintain the awareness, that mindfulness within, without thought. Then it will settle down and become positive. And this is the meditative mind, tranquility, stillness of mind. So when you develop this, your mind enters sati. Then throughout the day, you are already mindful. Every moment of seeing, there is sati. That's why the specific phenomenal awareness can come about. Because the mind is in sati. Everything that you come to perceive, all phenomena, the mind is aware. Even hearing, vibration, everything. Every moment of it, there is awareness. Then smell, taste, tactile, the feeling. Then even the movement or activity of mind, the feeling, the moment of feeling, moment of perception, moment of activity of mind or emotion, or the moment of consciousness, the mind is aware, because this mind is already in sati. It can be with it. So this is how factors of enlightenment or paucity come to be. Then as this paucity stabilizes, until it becomes very stable, then it develops a form of samadhi. Samadhi is the collected unwavering mind. Initially, this samadhi, it is not born of equanimity yet. Understand? It's born of continuous awareness, mindfulness, and paucity until it's very stable. That's why this one you got to develop until your daily mindfulness has samadhi together with paucity. Then after that, it can insight into phenomena. It can see things as they are with clarity. Then you can awaken. Then wisdom, the fifth spiritual faculty, will arise. Then when wisdom arises, the mind can develop the last factor of enlightenment. This last factor of enlightenment or equanimity is a different mind. This one is not born of a conditioned state in absorption or concentration. The mind that is in the fourth jhana is also characterized by upekkha, you know that. It's like they are enlightened. Because it's a conditioned state. In that jhanic state, one-pointedness, the mind cannot move. The hindrances are all suppressed. It cannot come out. The anusaya are all suppressed. It cannot surface. So that's why there is equanimity there. But this one is not born of wisdom. That's why later on, when they come out into life, when they get old, when they lose their ability to develop their jhana and their concentration, they can still be afflicted by the first noble truth. They still have problem with the five aggregates of form and mind. So this upekkha, which is an equanimous mind, born of wisdom that does not stir, react, and create duality. That's why it's always at peace. Anywhere, anytime, any place, born of wisdom. That's why without paucity and samadhi, upekkha cannot come about. So these seven factors of enlightenment, the moment you develop it, destruction of asava under Sabba Asava Sutta is very clear. It's possible. That's why it leads to the enlightenment. each and every of these factor of enlightenment leads to enlightenment. Yeah. They call it the Satta Bhujanga. So there is a sutta that you chant. Yeah. Satta Bhujanga Sutta. So this sutta is always chant to monks who are sick, or people who are sick. I think Ingbi, they all know. They always chant this Satta Bhujanga Sutta. Yeah, during the Buddha's time, a few of the top disciples, when they are sick, the other disciple go and chant. Initially, it was the Buddha who go and chant the Satta Bhujanga, but to remind them of the enlightenment factors, where they are already arahant. But when they are reminded of the enlightenment factor, because they have cultivated this before, then this mind, with the understanding, will arise the joy again. Understand? That it will have this, what they call, condition for their mind to become beautiful again. Otherwise, when they already arahant, they cannot be like normal human beings. You say, wow, this one, very beautiful mind state, enlightenment factor. We go and develop it and enjoy inside there. Then go into cessation for 7 days, 7 nights. I tell you, their mind is different. They will not do this type of thing anymore. So that's why sometimes they endure, understand? The body is the body, they understand. It's not them. It goes the way of nature. So they endure. But the Buddha knew, because all this, it can actually cause your consciousness to be affected, understand? But because they already enlightened, their mind does not suffer anymore. But these are the things that will arise, understand? So that's why the Buddha still go there, understand? And recite and chant the Bhujangas. That's why when sometimes I have, once a while, when I'm really sick. Because the good test was, I used to have this sinusitis last time. And my sinusitis, I don't know whether it was karmically for me to understand thing or what. When it comes, it's very, very throat, I can sneeze until I tell you. Like you look at me that time initially, you don't understand. Like I'm in a terrible state. Because that sinus will make you sneeze until like you are going to be sick for at least a few days or a week or two. You will never recover already. But the funny thing is, when I go through those states, inside, the mind very clear. The mind sometimes laugh, they got joy. Then I just silent and relax. Then I recall the teaching, understand? Then I recall the enlightenment factor. You can do it yourself, understand? Then you just silent. Then after that, if I have enough rest, I sleep overnight, I immediately recover. Yeah. I think a lot of Kayanamita knows that. Even when I go and travel, Yun Chan used to last time, Puto San, I don't know what. Because I overuse my physical strength, understand? My physical body, I have limited spare capacity, understand? So that, I think that Huang San, because we went to Wu Tai San, Huang San, then Chiu Hua San together. And the Huang San mountain is very, very high, a lot of walking. And that guide who took us there, you know what he told us? After the cable car went out, he said, very nearly 15 minutes. We walked for 2 hours, still haven't arrived. And some of it, all the baggage. Yun Chan was more fortunate because the husband, Raymond, carried 3. And she was 2 hands, no luggage. And for a physical body that doesn't have reserve, because I don't have much muscle, that was really exhausting. Then after that, I start to sneeze. Become very weak. But I rest one night, I recover. The next day, I recover. I need to sleep early and rest. Of course, I had to take this antihistamine. Because this sneezing come about because of histamine. Then after that, I recover. So you can reflect on all this. Satta Bhujanga is a very powerful sutta. If you want to recover from your mind state, especially when you confront sickness. So this is how meditation need to be developed with understanding. Means you have to be very focused. If you are not training your mind to develop the spiritual faculty, especially sati and stabilize it, then everything that you do actually is a waste of time. You are being gullible because you are not focused. You just repeat all those things, those instructions that people tell you. And the worst is you become gullible when they tell you, you watch rising, falling is vipassana. Actually, vipassana got nothing to do with watching one. Vipassana is to insight into the characteristics of nature. How you do it is not a method or a technique. Method and technique is just a series of instructions to do things, to train the mind. If the mind is not trained, if there is no enlightenment factor, you can never do vipassana. But vipassana is not a doing. Vipassana is to insight into. You cannot practice or do vipassana. Understand? Don't get me wrong. The word practice is very, very, what they call, you must understand the meaning. Who practice, what practice. If you use your thought to practice, you can never insight into phenomena. Understand? The spiritual faculty cannot be there. But when you cultivate spiritual faculty, then when the spiritual faculty is there, when the condition is ready, you will insight into phenomena. That's why vipassana is an insight, understand? It's not the outcome of practice, understand? It is born of a direct seeing. That's why Sabha Sutta say, knowing and seeing. Means if you don't have direct seeing, you cannot awaken. There is no wisdom. That's why when you have direct seeing, you will awaken. That's why that seeing is different. That seeing comes with the understanding. That's why there is knowing and seeing. The direct seeing that awaken. That's why only in those who know and see, there is destruction of asava. Not in those that don't know and don't see. So the Sabha Asava Sutta is also very useful. You can actually go through it and develop the understanding. It will help you in your cultivation. Yeah, it is a deeper way of explanation of the cultivation. But during the Buddha's time, there were a lot of doubt, I think, and also difference of opinion. So this Sabha Asava Sutta come about because there is one Venerable Chunda. He is the brother of Sariputta. He came and asked the Buddha, he said, Lord Buddha, there were so many versions of enlightenment, he said. There were many disciples who said when they abide in the first jhana, in what and what and what, that to them constitute enlightenment, awakening. Then he described the second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, until the eighth jhana. Yeah. Then he wants the Buddha, out of love and compassion for the community, to explain clearly to all the disciple as what really constitute enlightenment, liberation of mind. And that's how this Sabha Asava Sutta comes about. So the Buddha's opening statement is the complete destruction of asava or defilement only occur in one who know and see. Does not occur in one who doesn't know and see. And know what, see what. That's why the Buddha make it very clear. When you develop the direct seeing, you will develop the wisdom. He said, yoniso manasikara, wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Means when you attend to things with wisdom, with right understanding, with right view, then there is complete destruction of asava. Then he actually go through the eight jhana. He said, when people enter the first jhana, abide in this type of mind state, to them, they think this is enlightenment. But to the Aryan disciple of the Buddha said, means the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, this is only abide in the here and the now, in peace, in bliss, and in happiness. joy. It's not liberation of mind. He make it very clear. And he repeat for all the eight jhana, 1 to 8. That's why he himself, that time, when he was cultivating under the two teachers, Alara and Udaka, he also cultivated until the 7 and 8 jhana, and yet he was not enlightened. That's why he moved away and developed his own cultivation with greater determination after that. Well, he realized these are very special mind states that can end up in very, very, what they call, lofty rhyme, very high rhyme, where you will exist for very long. But what the Buddha wanted to overcome, to develop understanding, is the foresight that he saw that make him leave the palace to cultivate. You remember the foresight? He saw a sick person. Then he saw a diseased person. Oh, sorry. He saw an old person, very old, haggard person. Then he saw a sick and diseased person. Then he saw a dead man. Then he saw a samana, a holy monk. Then that time he cannot understand. He asked the attendant, he said, "Who is this person? How come so old, so haggard?" Then the attendant said, "He is an old man." He said, "What you mean by old?" He said, "Everybody, you and me also, one day, if we live long enough, we will become like him. Very old, very haggard." Then the Buddha knew this is suffering. This is not life anymore. Means all of the, what they call, happiness and joy that he's enjoying now that the Father has given him has got no more meaning. Because they are not real. Given time, he has to confront old age, sickness and death. He has a problem. That's why he wants to renounce the world, follow the samana, and seek an answer to birth and death. So that he can overcome old age, sickness and death. That's why he was not satisfied with all the jhanic experience that can give rise to rebirth in very lofty rhyme that can live very long. He said, no point. Then that fine day underneath the Bodhi tree that night, when he connect and become the fully enlightened one, Samasambuddha, then he realized that this form and mind is not what he is. That's why no more problem. Old age, sickness and death is this form, nothing to do with the nature. It's not him. That's why he realized the truth. That he's no longer afflicted by all this, disturbed by all this. That he can confront them with ease, with wisdom, with understanding. That's why his teaching is very different. He talked about the characteristics of non-self and empty nature. Or anatta. His core teaching is anatta and sunyata. So that was the reason why the Buddha is very different. So when you come to cultivation, you need to develop understanding of what is it that you are actually going after in the name of meditation. Okay? So this is just for your deeper understanding of what you do. So you don't worry. What you experience is very normal. But when you develop this understanding, you go back, reflect, contemplate, listen to the Dhamma again because it's recorded. Then when you understand it very clearly, you will cut short your practice, your cultivation, your so-called cultivation. When you walk the power of Dhamma with understanding, you don't have to actually walk the, what they call, yin wang lu. Yin wang lu. In English, how you say? There is no English translation. Wrong path is not as meaningful as the Mandarin one. Something like, no, like you go Holland, no. Unnecessary, you know. You actually wasted a lot of time going around that don't lead you to the destination, no. You actually wasted. Yen wang. That word is what? No, like, hou yin wang. 不应该做，你去做。 You're not supposed to walk that way and do all this. It leads to so much delusion and suffering and cause you to be so heedless, no? And continuously lost. No? And yet, you gullibly go and do, thinking that that is meditation. No? That's why, so, pao yan wang lu. Actually, it's very pitiful. And I don't blame people, because this is a very difficult teaching. It's not easy. Despite all the Pali text that is passed down, it's very accurate, I tell you. But the interpretation of it, the understanding of it, it has lost its authenticity over the years. Just like when you pass down information or knowledge, like there is no written text, I tell you, you pass it down. Means one, from one, you pass to the second, second pass to the third. You say, you remember, this is what you have to do. Then you say all these things. Then after that, you just imagine, maybe 90% he remember. Then the 10% he don't remember, he add another word. Then he pass it down to the second one. The second one is even more confused, because what he received, he also doesn't know what, whether it's authentic or not. Then, based on his understanding, he will perceive it again. Okay, I will pass it down. And I tell you, after 10%, you read the whole thing, it's totally different already. But for 2,000 over years, it's passed down like that. Then last time, no written text, only verbal. That's why luckily they commit to chanting. Otherwise, all get distorted, I tell you. That's why the Buddha is very wise. He put it to chanting. And chanting, paritta, is also very useful. Yeah? The vibration can develop the faith. Then it can open up your heart. Then it can actually touch your nature. So all this, the Buddha has his reason and he's very wise. And the timing and all those things also, I think it is meant to be. Because there are people who ask this question, why the Buddha come too early? They come now, all the technology, everything, we can video everything, that everybody can get the true teaching. But you must understand, without the Buddha, this civilization cannot come about. Then the timing and the conditioning is because of his aspiration, because of his perfection and his earlier vow. The prediction, everything already conditioned inside. So it has to be that time. Means it has to be that time. Okay? Yeah. So I hope you all can develop better understanding of what the teaching is. Then you go back and investigate yourself and find out yourself, then contemplate, reflect, and understand clearly. It's good to write it out, actually. Write it out. If you can write it out without having to refer to any notes, means you understand. You can prepare your note first. You listen, then you write down, then you read, then you understand, like you study. Then you close your book. Then you try to recall. Not until you can recall and understand all this, you cannot put it into practice, I tell you. If you can't even remember what they are, how can you practice or cultivate yourself? Like the three evil roots. You don't even know what are the three evil roots. You cultivate mindfulness for what? Because you don't even know what is the evil root. You cannot develop mindfulness over it. That's why when you have mindfulness, you want to investigate Dhamma, you must understand the essential Dhamma. You don't even what are the evil roots, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Even if you are very mindful, no use. Then you cannot see them. You don't even know that these are evil roots. Then the five spiritual faculties, when you don't understand its deep meaning, then you go and cultivate, you taught by chanting. Bedang saranang gacami, I take refuge in the Buddha. Oh, I take refuge already. Oh. Then after that, I develop faith already. If you do like that, it's not going to be stable. Understand? It's not going to be deep. No. But the Buddha mentioned what? Just now we invite the devas, invocation. That's why I recited the triple gem, understand? Salutation. You have to go and reflect and contemplate into this Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. No. That's why there is Buddha Nusati. contemplation on the nine great virtues of the Buddha, then Dhammanusati, then Sanghanusati. What constitutes Sangha? What are their characteristics? Why is this a triple gem? Then what is the real Dhamma, the characteristics and everything? That's why it all stated there. No? So your cultivation and practice does not fall back into this, means you are already distracted, sidetracked. If the Dhamma is akaliko and you cultivate using your thought, which is thought-based, it can never lead to the timeless, then you are totally off tangent. You are wasting your time, actually, being heedless. Then if it's not open ego, yeah, leading inward to the mind, to the gateway, to the nature, yeah, then pachetang can be realized by the wise each for themselves, then again, you are not developing the actual Dhamma. Anasana. Then it can be any other teaching. Yeah. But you think you enlightened. Anasana. Then if it doesn't follow Noble Eightfold Path, if you just meditate until fantastic experience, then you say you awaken, you are really enlightened. But your Noble Eightfold Path factor are still not perfected. You are still very crude in the way you conduct yourself, in the way you arise your speech, deliver your action, and arise your thought. You don't have proper right view. You don't understand life thoroughly. You don't know who you are, what you are. That is not the teaching of the Buddha. That is not the enlightenment that the Buddha is talking about. So you need to be very clear about the essential Dhamma and its teaching. Then when you cultivate with this understanding, you are very focused. Then you will know whether you are on the right track or wrong track. That's why Dhamma can be put to test. It will stand up to investigation. That's why it's ehi pa seko. No need to guess. No need to like doubt and all those things. No need to check with the book, check with the monk. You just check inside. The Buddha already said this Dhamma can be realized by the wise. But the moment you awaken, no need to check on. Inside very clear one. But you still need to check. Chances is not the real one. Because the thought is very cunning. The thought always come up with idea. I think you there already. This is what jnana, this is what the Buddha teach. This is anicang dukang anatta. I very mindful already. I got no thought already. I know this is not me. I know more sakaya diti. Then the word come, I think I saw tapan. But the word think still there. So a lot of this, when you are clear with the teaching, you will not have this type of problem. Your spiritual faculty will overcome the hindrance, so that doubt no more. Because it's pachetang. Okay. Oh, 5 more minutes, 4 more minutes. So, you got any more question? Just to clarify or whatever that you want to ask or add, you can. We got still 4 minutes to go. Anybody? Confirm. So the retreat at Cameron Highland is confirmed. March 14 to 22nd. So you make a note. So this time I was told by Sri Ayan we need maybe 2 bus at least. So those who are going out on their own is not counted. So we try to limit to about 80 to 84. Maximum maybe 84 going on the bus. Those that take own transport, you can still go. Now we have how many? 60 plus? 65. We still got another 18 or 19 places at the max. So if you are interested, you register with Sui An or Stephanie also again. Okay, you got no more questions, maybe we will do the sharing of merits and transfer merit, then we end. devas. Akasatta cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata cha mehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transform merits to departed one. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them, and may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, we'll invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vastatu kalena sasa sampati heto cha vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers, be righteous. Okay, now you make your aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamena mengame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Then we end.
All right.